Hey, welcome to Midday Cafe, and I am your host, Michael Giannotti, and we do have the mics on, right? Unmuted, okay. I want to welcome everybody. Happy Monday. It's a beautiful day here in Malvern, Pennsylvania. I don't know about you folks, but I spent the weekend getting some work done outside. We had a little rain on Saturday, but had a little bit of fun this weekend. Steven, what were you up to this weekend, Producer Steve? By the way, say hello, Producer Steve.
How you guys doing out there today? I had a good weekend. It started out rainy, but then the sun came mid-Saturday, and it was outdoors for the next 2 days.
Yeah. Golf. You do anything fun outside?
Saturday, golf, Sunday. I ended up getting into a battle with a hornet's nest.
And who was the winner?
Well, I ran, so I guess they held the ground.
There you go. They held their ground, so you fled... run away to fight again another day.
I know where they are now.
You know where they live.
I'll come back with a better plan.
All right.
How was your weekend?
Talk to me later, because I got some advice on the hornet front. I have many battles.
I'm all ears.
So I had a great weekend. Like I said, we relaxing one at home. Hope you all did as well. It rained in the morning, but the John Deere came out Saturday, after being housed all winter. I actually got a chance to. I opened up the garage, the one side, pulled the snow blower out of the way, pulled out the leaf picker-upper from previous fall, fired up the tractor, got out there on the property, and was able to get everything mowed. So Mrs. G was very happy about that. And then Sunday, what did I do? I power washed the deck. We're getting ready for barbecue season. So this week we'll be staining after work. So I don't know what you've all been up to. We'd love to hear from you. Welcome to today's broadcast. So we've got a number of things that we're going to be talking about today. We have some 3D printing goodness, but before that, we have tech news. And as a reminder for all of those joining us today, down below the video. So if you look down here, right down there, there is a moderated Q&A box. We'd love to hear from you, who you are, where you're from, ask questions. Leave a comment, a shout out. It's all good. And we'll queue you up live on air, and we will address those questions, forward your comments, etc. So let's keep it social, folks. But we do have a lot of stuff that's been happening in the world of tech news. Have you been following tech news, Steven?
Yeah, I like to think I keep a pretty good eye on it.
You keep a good eye. Well, did you know about the Project Portfolio Dashboard?
I must have missed that while I was running away from hornets over there.
While you were fleeing the hornets. Missed that one. So a couple of things. I have three stories in 3 minutes to quickly talk to you about. The first of which is the Office 365 Project Portfolio Dashboard apps are now live. So what does that mean? Well, if you're not aware, as an extension to the Office 365 offering, you can have Office Project Online. And with Project Online, you now have this whole portfolio dashboard with web apps. So here they're showing it. Why don't we go full screen? And they actually have a link, and we'll have a link to all this after a break when we post the archive. They have a whole what can I do with this portfolio dashboard. But taking a look at it, here you can see we get an in-depth view of an overall enterprise's projects, not just one, but many. So you're getting that roll-up view. We have this web app where we're seeing all the charts that are available, tables, etc. And so people can take a look. We also have a portfolio dashboard now available for iOS or for the iPad. So for folks who are mobile, who have iPads in their organization, they're going to be able to get to that same data and go ahead and get drill downs into their enterprise projects, see what's happening. So here you can see some status. We have some alerts where we have stuff in red. We have one item in green that's on schedule. Auditing not in green. In fact, it's in danger. And so you can go ahead and grab that. We have a link to the download for the dashboard for iOS. So certainly through the login to Office 365, we get that. But you can actually grab the iPad app right off of here. Again, we'll have a link to this after the break when we have our archive posted. So be on the look for that. And check out what you can be looking at with your project online. The next story I have a link to, I'm pretty excited about. So As many of you know, I was involved in education for many years. My background's elementary ed. That's my degree. I taught for over 8 years. My wife taught special ed for a number of years. And here we have learning tools that are add-ins in Microsoft OneNote that are, it's a whole article, and this one's by Lauren Pittman, who's a special ed teacher in Holly Springs, Georgia. And Lauren is talking all about how the new add-ins that are really focused, the learning tools, they have all kinds of things for accessibility for special education. So here you can see Lauren has a kind of a screenshot of her class. And then she starts to talk about what she's doing both with Sway and how that's made digital publishing accessible and user-friendly for her special ed students, because it takes a lot of the complexities of traditional publishing out of the mix, as well as how OneNote integrates with all that and new things for accessibility around, for example, instead of the students having to type and format and create all this information and try to make it structured in a way that's presentable, just be able to talk to their note-taking application and having it actually transcribe and bring that to life for them on the fly. So all those are available. Great article on how she's using it. In fact, we even have a video from her around using the learning tools to transform the student experience in the special ed. I highly encourage you, if you have friends, family, others who are out there in the education field, because this is applicable across the board, have them take a look. Chances are they have access to OneNote for the classroom. And again, if they're using this in the classroom and especially with special ed, and I see somebody's out there, why don't you pop in? Who, we have somebody peeking in. Let them, they can come on in. They can say hi. Hi.
Hello.
You can come in, peek in. It's okay. We welcome everybody. We have a studio audience. Tim's bringing a, are you on a tour?
Yes.
We have folks on a tour today. In fact, wait a minute, 1 second here. Let's open up our camera app. So there, over my shoulder, we can see the front. We have, say hello, everybody. You're live on air. Hi. No, we don't have an applause meter here. I do it myself for me. Yay, Mike. Good job. So we have a tour going on. So welcome. Enjoy. Hope you're enjoying your stay here. But back to our story. So for those in special ed or any kind of educational field, just to let you know, this is a great resource. It is a free update to OneNote, which we also make freely available for schools. Check it out. I'll have a link to this, the video, and more after the break. So be sure to talk to your friends and family, those educators you know. Moving on to our last tech news story of the day.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for coming. So there we go. We're always live here in the MTC. Our last is around, and this is kind of a nice little, this will kind of secondhandly tie into what's coming down the pike, but global manufacturer. So they have a great, one of the things I love with the Office blogs is when they do case studies, so you can see what folks are really doing with the tool sets. This one is on Jabil, and Jabil is a global manufacturer. I believe they're in 30 countries with 110 plants in 30 different countries, and they are a manufacturer. They do manufacture all kinds of stuff. They were an early cloud adopter. In fact, they had adopted Google Apps. No, Steven, don't boo. I know you want to boo and hiss. Hold yourself. That's your cue. You're supposed to have gone boo. What is this?
I was doing it. The mic was off.
He was doing a silent boo.
Don't worry, we'll get our boos.
We'll give it. So at any rate, they had adopted Google Apps, but they found that they, you know, back then it was nice to be able to have something in the cloud, but it did not position them moving forward in the future for the richness of collaboration they needed. And we've seen that with many organizations who early on had adopted Google Docs as they wanted to get off-prem with their collaboration. So like many, they went to Office 365. And this is a great post on that, you know, worldwide presence. And I think that's important because as you think about, especially if you're involved with, for example, the EU, if you have plant manufacturing or offices in Europe, you know, one of the advantages with Office 365 is the ability to stay compliant when it comes to things like some of the EU regulations, where you have to know where does your data reside. And some of the other cloud vendors can't tell you that because they do what's called sharding of the data. In other words, it's spread pieces of it everywhere. They can't guarantee you where that is at. And we can do that in 365. We can help you achieve compliance. I mean, we have, you know, customers that are in Germany and others who have very strict local compliance, but they're multinational and have found that with 365, they can have the best of both worlds. So great case study. We'll have a link to that and all the data after the break. And I encourage you to take a look at that. Last thing before we get started. So we're going to be having our special guests coming in one moment. I'm going to have them, we're going to tee them up. They have all kinds of goodies. I actually have a, that looks pretty cool what it's doing over here. We're going to take a look at that. We've got devices and things we're going to show, but I just wanted to kind of tease it up because I'd posted some pictures of this last week and people are like, what? What is that? I had, and it's this. So let's, I'm going to show you a screenshot. You want to go full screen with that, Stephen, for a second? There we go. So the device that I just held up was printed here in our Malvern office, and it is a digital sundial. Now, when I first showed this, I had students walking through last week, the MTC. We took them on a tour. And when they saw it, they were like, I said, well, what do you think it is? And I had a number of all kinds of comments from air freshener to, what were some of the other? Oh, a salsa strainer, because we have it sitting on top of a salsa thing. All kinds of crazy answers. But when we showed them, they were like, whoa, no, they had no idea. Here in this picture, you can see, here's our digital sundial set up. Now, my photography, not the greatest, but what you can see is as the sun changes its position, and this is very intricate, this device. We'll show you a close-up of it live here in a bit. But the sun, as it changes position, the light filters through, and then on the portion that's shaded below, you can see here a digital readout. Here it's saying 1240, and every 10 minutes that changes. So a digital sundial. You can come on back, Stephen. But that's just one example of something just kind of fun we did here. We're going to be talking about many more instances of that and some other things. So I think it's time that we cue up our special guest. And Stephen, I believe we have a video for that, do we not? So let's go ahead and on our preview, why don't you pull up D1? And there we go. And we're back. Whoa, where'd you guys come from?
I don't know. I just landed here.
You just landed?
Yeah.
So today, I'm pretty excited. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves first? And then I'll tell you why I'm excited. So who are you and what do you do?
My name is Frank. Frank Quinlis. I'm from Profound 3D.
Profound here. 3D?
Yes.
It's not just 3D.
It's Profound 3D.
Yes.
Yes. Here in beautiful Exton, Pennsylvania, or right down the road in Exton.
Right down the road.
Yeah.
You guys have an office here, and what is some of the stuff that you guys do out of Profound 3D?
Well, 3D printing is what we're about, but our 3D printing is about machines that work, because 3D printing,
not play toys,
not and not paperweights, not glorious paperweights that
yes.
are found in different places. A lot of 3D printers now have the ability to scan built into them, have cameras built into them, but at the end of the day, they still have marginal extruders and printheads in them.
Yes.
So we run into a lot of schools that have them, and they say, yeah, my school has those. We have a couple of those, and they're really angry about them because they don't work.
They don't work.
So our focus has been machines that work. That
cool.
You start the job, and you come back the next morning, and the job's done.
And we're going to talk about that because we have firsthand experience. But before we do, we also have
Tim.
And what do you do?
I am also with Profound 3D.
But what do you do at Profound 3D?
A little bit of everything.
Little of everything. In fact, you brought in some of the device, well, the device that we're going to see here that's printing. And so we saw a video to kind of tee this all up. So what were we seeing? You know, talking about not you know, glorified toys, et cetera, but actual use case. What did we just see for the viewers out there?
What you saw there was one of the most common applications that we're seeing both in education and in industrial, and that goes back to the architecture side of things, where things can be built to see where the problems lie at before you, basically you're building a mistake before you go large scale with something. So you can see the how things come together.
Yep.
At a different scale. You can try a part before you find out that you just ordered a bunch of them and you can't make them work.
And you know, that just brought to mind, like with that whole idea with printing, and one of the things that I've been seeing on Science Channel, using them to prototype.
Yeah.
For prototype pieces. And
that's a big use of these machines in industry today. As a lot of people have told us, it allows them to fail faster. So they can see the mistake, correct it, rebuild it in-house in a matter of hours, maybe a day, depending on the size of the part.
And that idea of fail fast, I mean, that's pervasive. That's not just a term for this, because certainly here at Microsoft, in fact, it's funny, when you said that, I had like a flashback from Friday. Our corporate intranet, the homepage, the big post was, don't be afraid to be human, fail, but fail fast. Right? So
absolutely.
Get out there. So, and the beauty with a 3D printer is we can experiment, we can get out there, be bold, be imaginative, and if you're gonna fail, find out early so you can iterate and move on.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Beautiful. So what are you're gonna be showing us today? You got a whole bunch of stuff. What do you wanna show us, talk to us about?
Well,
I mean, we got a whole range of
stuff. You touched
on
the
here.
Education piece. You didn't mention that when we first met, that your background in education and your wife's background in special education.
I taught English for 8 years. Yes.
So we had started in education because that's some of the more interesting things, or not everything we've been dealing with is interesting, but that's some of the fun applications that we've been running in as far as the education.
And what are some of the challenges you see with the education sector and printing?
A big piece is a lot of these projects are being done by groups.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were talking about earlier, someone could start a job, it gets 60% done on a print job,
yep,
and then it stopped. So this whole group of students all booked their time in the 3D print lab, their project failed, and then it moves everybody's schedule out of whack.
And holds them back.
So that's a big thing that we run into, in the education piece, trying to eliminate that with some real sturdy machines like the one that we brought today.
So the point being, don't fail.
Don't fail.
And so before you move to this machine, because we want to show it, you know, just to kind of throw out there, we talked about, I don't know, is this even showing? It's probably invisible.
It's blue.
It's blue. Huh? Oh, so it is showing.
Yeah.
Well, that's beautiful. So. Our digital sundial is a great example of that. You know, here in the Microsoft Technology Center, we have more than just the one 3D printer. We have one they sell out of the stores. And so we got that early on. And it's cute. It does, you know, little toy stuff and all that. But when we tried to print this digital sundial, number one, it could not handle, I don't know another way to put it, but resolution.
The resolution, yeah.
Right? The number of lines and stuff. So it was a mess inside. It just didn't work. But we've seen also the extruder heads going to the failure point.
Yeah.
Time and I mean, we can't count the number of times that those extruder heads fail, and Steven has had to do a shipment and send them on back. You know, or they're shipping, hey, we need new extruder. We keep replacing them over and over, whereas with the one you're going to show us, when we start a print run, it just goes.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Yeah. Like it did with this baby here.
So on the education side of things, we'll go to a show, and we do get some teachers that come up to us and say, "Oh, wow, that's really cute. It makes a neat, makes something fun, but how can I use it in my classroom?" So what we found is that it brings together the math, it brings together the art, and it brings together the engineering. It puts those three things together. And when a teacher sees that those pieces come together when they're working with this, it becomes more compelling for them in the classroom.
Yep.
So we've been working on trying to develop classroom curriculum that would help a class. So if a teacher comes to me and says, I have a classroom of second, third, and fifth graders, or second, third, and fourth graders, we have curriculum packages that we can point them towards that will be designed for those age groups that they can
age appropriate.
And it takes them all the way from the design all the way to the finished product.
Very cool.
In a lot of ways, where in the past a presentation might have been at the end of the day like a PowerPoint presentation, they can actually build what they're making.
Right.
And that's where they can start to see where they can take it from just the concept and the art and the math and the engineering and actually build a physical product.
So, but when we talk about a physical product, obviously, I mean, it's 3D printing, it's using like a resin type material, right? Plastic?
Yeah, ABS.
Plastic.
Yeah,
it's plastic.
Plastic.
So it's running that down. So obviously, since it's, kind of melting and then assembling it, it's got to be pretty limited on what it can put together, right? We're talking like just simple geometric shapes. And nothing interlinked and sophisticated, right? Or am I wrong?
You're wrong.
I'm wrong. Wait a minute. Whoa. So let's bring up, so we can highlight. Steven, say hello. There we go. So we have, I'm going to pull up the camera so we can show it. There we go. And so what do you got there?
This is a lightsaber.
So wait, so a light, so... A full-blown lightsaber. Look at this thing. I mean, this is pretty intricate.
Yeah.
I mean, we got a clip here. Got all kinds of... So it printed all the component parts
all
that you
the
then assembled.
Parts, then you put it together. Yep. So the laser part is non-functional, though. Or the beam, the blade.
So very. That's pretty sophisticated. But again, component parts that you had to put together. If you didn't put it together, though, you couldn't have like complex geometric forms or any of that, could you? Or could you?
I don't know.
Wait a minute. What is this?
Oh, there. Yeah. Yes, you can. Yes. This was built. We use this as a test to show that the printer will work.
This thing's rugged.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
I saw it sitting there, and I'm like, keep going. That thing is like solid.
Yeah, we were at a trade show, a 3D printing trade show last week up in New York, and we were taking turns standing on this.
Really?
Yeah.
So a grown man standing on the thing.
Yes.
But this is one print run.
One print.
And it did this sophisticated... So we can get, again, when you're talking about prototyping, I know we've done a couple of prints here where we've done things like something as simple as a car toy, but with a moving axle, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it's a print. We didn't assemble it.
No, it came out that way.
It came out that. Oh, wait a minute. What do you got here?
Got a bearing.
Wait a minute. Whoa. A bearing?
Bearing.
So again, talking about prototyping. So this is one print run?
One print.
So we've got the bearings inside. Wow. That is crazy. The bearings, the inner bushing, everything done in a print run.
Yeah. And that's what we're printing now on the machine.
So we're printing that. So... That brings us to, what do we got here for a device?
This is the Zortrax M200.
Mm-hmm.
And that printed this guy and all these pieces here. It printed all of them. It's it's got a build space of about 7.8 inches, cube is 7.8 inches. And
it's printing that bearing one right now.
Yes.
Correct.
Take that and show me from the top. Because that's got to be just crazy. So there you can see. So it started on the other side. On the downside, it would have started where the bearings would be to the outside on that piece.
Yep.
And then it's printing the whole thing moving up. It's kind of like
layer by layer.
Yep. And it's accurate enough that the bearings are functioning and roll, which we just saw.
Mm-hmm.
So again, wow. So what is the limitations of something like this for prototyping and doing these kind of
limitations? Some of them are based on the filament that's are available. Like you were talking earlier about what could I use to build this? What different materials? Every day there's more filament that's being made available. So it's questions that I got last month I can answer now as far as being different other filaments that are available to make them. So we have one company that's working on a nylon filament, which works for industrial applications.
It'll run in the same printer.
Yeah, yeah. Based on the temperature,
Nylon filament.
Yeah, yeah.
Working on it.
Yeah,
wow.
They're working on that now. This is another one that ties into education. There's not much to see here, but this is a
So what do we got here?
Let's see it here. This is just a thimble that was made, but this is a conductive filament. So this was designed working with a friend of ours from the Bucks County Intermediate Unit.
Okay.
This conductive filament was designed for someone that needed to use a pad or a phone. And the child that had this worked with the intermediate unit there within their assistive technology group. Now, normally you'd use a pad with your fingertip. So go ahead and that's where that's happening. Well, this child his hands were formed where they couldn't get that fingertip on.
He had a physical disability that wouldn't let him do that.
So by using this conductive filament, he could use his fingernail to make that connection to the keypad, pad of the actual device. And then to add on top of it, for a lot of kids that have issues with communication, that need assistive technology of communication, say this child had a problem where they couldn't get the fingertip on there, but they also had a drift, where their hands might drift. So if this was the communication pad, this was, you know, yes, no, all the different
things. So it aligns with the screen.
So their fingers can't drift off the display.
And you can customize it, too,
for different displays.
For different displays.
Yeah.
So then all the teacher does is change the display, put the other. And I mean, I look at it and you're like, that's such a simple design, but so practical for that kind of a child, right?
That's a practical application.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. What else did you got some other things you brought here.
Well, this one also, these other also fall into education. We were at a science show in Philadelphia a couple months ago, and these are just little molecular models. You know, they get put together. So
and they snap.
They snap together. And a teacher came up to us and said, wow, that's really cool. I like those. But would this save me money versus just buying them at the school supplies shop that I get them from?
Right, right.
And we said, it's not about saving money on the supplies. You don't want to replace the mass manufactured custom mold of this.
Today.
But when a student can actually make these pieces and then gets into the understanding of how, you know, what are these components? What are the things that link things together? What are these different cells? What are these different components become? And then the light went on with her. She
understood
that it wasn't about replacing manufacturing at this point.
Yeah.
But it was about developing and had the kids be able to see what they're building and how they're putting it together.
It's really that end-to-end learning experience.
Yes. Yeah. So that's another thing that we brought. And it's a simple example. Well, you put it in an educational concept where a student can actually design these themselves and make it themselves, and it enables them to that's where we're coming from as far as on the educational side.
So one other thing just to kind of highlight with education, you can come on back, Stephen, that, you know, really strikes me is, and we were talking about this earlier, that, you know, a lot of times educators may not, I know when I was a teacher many moons ago, and computers were still relatively new. When I left teaching, we had just the year prior rolled out Windows 95. So, you know, a lot of new stuff. But one of the things that you see taking place is really this idea of preparing the students for the future. And what I find interesting, when we bring enterprise customers here to the MTC, and they see, like, the Zortrex printing, and they see, like, where's that thing again with the bearings? It's just killer, man. When they see something like this, and they're talking about, today this is a prototype, But tomorrow, this isn't a prototype, it's a finished product, you know, future. So when you're in the education space, you know, certainly in the enterprise space, rapid prototyping and doing things at the university level the same, even high school, et cetera. But this idea of becoming proficient in printing and understanding how to do spatial design and end to end, like you're saying with the molecules, or, you know, I'm seeing this one. This is reminding me of my little trip back here. We have a conch. I love conch. So we have a conch shell, and that's printed out. But taking those learning experiences and tying them, so maybe it's a reading unit on the C, and then they learn also tie it back to the computer lab in a printing 3D printing experience. You're preparing them for the future, because eventually it's around not manufacturing for a lot of things, but the intellectual property, the ability to envision and design. Because people all have devices at home that, again, don't just print a ball bearing unit, you know, that's a prototype, it's the real deal.
Well, we had a, at the...
this lights up and go, Darth Vader, get back, right?
Yeah, well, I was at a show, at an educational show, and one of the first customers or visitors of the show came up to me. And he was telling me a story, and he was interested in that video that we showed when we came in, where it showed the design building.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I need to talk, in like with what you're going to, or what you're addressing, I want to have my kids understand scale, like the concept
right.
of scale.
Yep.
So he told me about how he created this this project for his kids. And he said, listen, I want you to build this to this scale. I want you to build, mm-hmm. they were designing a room. Bring it into the scale. So the one kid came into class the first day with this massive box that he had built.
Right.
And he put it down, and the teacher said, well, his scale was off. His
right.
scale was just off. And by using the 3D printer and using the software to develop and understand the math part of the scale,
mm-hmm.
and understanding something as simple as scale, that to him, that was the really magic part of it. For him.
And this whole idea of scale, because again, I love watch. I'm a veg. I'm a cream puff at home. But I like to watch like the Science Channel and Discovery and all that. And I saw a show the other day in the importance of scale, and they were talking about modern shipbuilding. And it was showing the founder, the first one who did it wasn't a wave tank. It was actually what did they call it? Hydro resistance tank that was designed in the 1800s, where they still use his formula for designing and testing. But essentially what he did was he created this tank with a track and a steam pulley on it, and he created a scale model of a ship. Attached to the scale model of a ship, the part that attached to the steam pull, he had a device that was a simple weight measurement of weight, right?
Yeah.
So what he did was then he invoked it, and he had it so that it had a big dial on it so he could see it, read it as it was going, and he was able to determine the drag on the bow of the boat based upon the design of the boat and all that. And then his first studies of that revolutionized shipbuilding. And today what they do is scale model, so it's model to scale. And in fact, now it's really bringing it all back. They were 3D printing bow designs and stuff, so they were showing like modern racing, offshore racing and things, where they needed to test how it worked, you know, with drag as opposed to also stability and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But it was all based on scale. They designed, to your point, fail early. You don't
right.
build this big thing. Like back in the day, Howard Stern's built the Spruce Goose, world's biggest plane, and all, it's going to be great. And it got up for about 100 yards, and that was it.
Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes. Who do I say?
You said Howard Stern.
Howard Stern. Did I really?
Yeah. Didn't he say that? Yeah.
I believe Howard Stern once tried to build a large aircraft on the water as well and failed spectacularly.
Yeah.
But, Howard Hughes. Thank
Howard
you.
Howard Hughes. Yeah.
So, you know, this idea of fail early, learn, and scale, it's all inherent.
Yeah, and the fail part can be in the design, but we want to also offer machine in the Zortrax where mm-hmm. the fail isn't in the production. That's
correct.
That's what we
taking
try to
that element
machine.
Out. Because to your point, a lot of, and I know a lot of schools who bought these other devices that you can buy. Like I saw at Sam's Club, they had a mini one the other day. I saw it there, and it was they had it printing something cute. But again, what we've seen, excuse me, and what you know we hear and you've heard is this failure rate, which that can cause an impediment with multiple projects, et cetera.
Yeah. It slows things down once they get it running, or
they get discouraged.
Yeah, they get discouraged with the whole process.
Yeah, how many times do I got to do this? Because it's not instant. The printing is not like printing a sheet of paper.
No. It takes some time. And teachers have a lot of other things to do other than to
wait on
a 3D printer, have it fail, restart things. They're already taxed enough. They don't need to worry about that.
They don't need that stress.
No.
And again, it is, you know, I'm having fun watching this come to life. I didn't know what you were printing at first, and now that I'm like, wow, that is rocking.
Well, that's our favorite. This is our favorite thing to print at trade shows and for customers because it doesn't take that long to print.
Yeah.
And people can take it with them.
And it brings to life the whole concept.
And you can have this after we're done.
Are you serious?
I feel like you're connected to it. I feel like
I'm gonna show it on my show regularly.
Nice.
Very cool. So what about in the enterprise space? What are we seeing the use?
The enterprise, one of the best examples we have is actually with our one sister company. We do some manufacturing over in China. And one of the things that we build is a control box. It's for a mechanism, a TV mechanism that we mm-hmm. build. And we ended up sending a 3D printer over to the factory, the same 3D printer that we have here. And when they want to do a new sample of a prototype of a control box or a power box, they can send over the design. We can print it here.
Yep.
And then we can test it here and say, okay, well, this works. This doesn't work. We can send something back to them. They can do the same thing. And it eliminates all that international shipping.
Sure.
It eliminates all the time involved with it. Sometimes we can just...
It's almost like a transporter.
Yes. It is.
Just transport the design and here you go.
Yeah, but it'd be a little slower than the one.
A little slower than Star Trek. But still, I mean, this whole idea, again, of prototyping, and you were talking about cases. We have, throughout the MTC here, we have these Internet of Thing devices monitoring in each room, motion, humidity, decibel level, temperature. And some of the new ones that are being, we purposely left them raw. So customers ask questions. But the new ones that are being built in the back there by our developer, Evangelist Rich Ross, Steven, didn't you print off a case for him?
Yeah, we made a Raspberry Pi case.
And how'd that come out?
I think it came out quite well. I can go grab it really quick.
You want to grab that? Grab it, because it's got the Pi in it, right?
It does.
Why don't you grab that? But yeah, this
real
idea,
pie.
You know, pie. Apple pie, because we prefer apple pie here. Well, actually, no, the Raspberry Pi. So this idea, again, of prototyping, in this case, we're actually building ones for use here.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it tremendously fascinating. Now, at your guys over at your shop with the types of 3D printers, is this the sole one? Do you have additionals that you work with? What do you guys do as a service, and I guess what's the end-to-end that you do? So obviously we sell this unit.
We have other units. The Zortrax is our main unit that
okay.
we work with. It's the primary one that we work with, and we didn't happen upon it. We kind of figured out, like you guys have figured out here, that this is the machine that prints
most
consistently.
Our Raspberry Pi. See, let me come back here. So we got this nice case. It's mountable, right?
Even did it in two-color.
Two-color? Yeah, and then we can go Internet of Things. It has, you know, Ethernet. We've got USB hookups. It's got sensors in here. And it just looks cool. Looks like you bought it.
Yeah.
So
what
going
we're doing,
back to this, yeah.
So we found the Zortrax one because it's the most consistent. Like we really have tried to focus on the education market.
So that's your main emphasis with this.
And some industrial. We can't be everything like anybody. We can't be everything to everyone.
Yep.
So we've been working with the Zortrax in the education market. One of the areas that we've developed and started working in is with some of the other machines that we have that have larger build platforms. So we have a newer machine that has a 24-inch tall build platform.
Wow.
And we were at a 3D show last week, and I think five of the first people that came to our booth in the first hour were all in prosthetics. They were all
and
looking
they needed
at
that
it.
Longer device.
They needed a longer device. So we ended up talking to a customer that was interested in buying several of these that were going to go over to Africa, where these units could be used to build
like
prosthetic
that.
Arms.
Yeah.
Prosthetic hands.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you're changing somebody's life with something like
yeah,
this.
Because instead of paying, I don't know, tens of thousands, that's probably an underestimate.
I mean, they're expensive
to
buy a prosthetics are expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially for children.
Because they're changing,
they're
too.
They're changing so fast,
as
and
they
have
grow.
To replace these things so quickly. But with a 3D printer, and from what I understand, some of them are doing the modifications themselves so they can make it better to work for them.
Especially, right, it's funny you mention it, because one of my other shows that I saw, they were showing that, where they showed it was a gentleman in the Philippines, and he worked in the fields. And they developed, and they printed he had a prosthetic hand, before he had to gather rice, and they created like some kind of, I don't know who did it, somebody designed a variation, but instead of it being the like hand, and they had a, for him it was almost like this type of, one, live long and prosper,
yeah,
but it was a basic grabbing type device he normally had. They created a different one that had to do with, it would grasp and hold the implement he was using for pulling up the rice.
Yeah.
And it was like just something simple, because somebody had an idea, they had somebody out there who can understand on the fly, redesign and not have tens of thousands, thousands of dollars for this thing. Let's do it now, here and now.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing that we see with the Zortrax printer, that the quality for a lot of people is good enough for production quality.
Mm-hmm.
So where, if you were doing a short run of something before, a lot of times it was cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
Because you have to pay for prototyping, you have to pay for injection molding, and you just couldn't do it. Now with 3D printing, you can.
You can do it.
And with the Zortrax, Zortrax sells other filaments that are more, more for industrial use.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people see the basic filament that comes with it, and it's so much better than some of the filaments that come with other printers. I mean, they're starting at a whole nother level as far as the quality. So this printer goes down to 90 microns,
yes.
Where most standard units will go and start off at 100 microns, which is exponentially a much better print. And people can just, as Tim was saying earlier, it's in the sight test. Is that what it is? Sight test?
Yeah, eye test.
Eye test, sorry. In the eye test. In the eye test.
You're kind of like my Howard Stern.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And in the eye test, they can actually see the physical difference. Like we did this was originally from a scan of a real conch shell.
Uh-huh.
And we did this on a
couple
of different
printers.
You can
hold that up so they can see it, yeah.
And the quality of this is just night and day. I mean,
yeah.
It's just so much better. To the point my son and I are planning on painting a couple of these and putting them on the beach and videotaping people.
People picking them up.
Walk them up and see if they can hear anything. We could probably put a little speaker in there, I guess, and really mess with
you
them.
Could you could do some fun. Dude, you just gave me some prank ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the quality of the Zortrax print makes it where, out of the box, it's printing a print that's much better than other printers.
And that's, it's funny you mention that, because one of the comments we've gotten when we have people in and they feel the different prints they have is, how come this one's rough and how come this one's so smooth? And so we'll point out it's this particular, and just to let people know, so this is not from us, I'm not like doing an advertisement. We're here at the Technology Center to show you the art of the possible, and we want to talk about things that work. And this is something that we see just it really resonates with our customers. That's why I got excited when you guys said you wanted to come in. So what did you got there?
Oh, this is a just a common buckle you might find.
No way! Look at this.
A backpack, something like that.
So, get that out of the way. There we go.
But it has a quality of mass-produced part. I mean,
it
maybe
feels
it's better.
Smooth.
Yeah.
Wow. So I mean, I could literally take this now with some straps, and I'd have the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. And as a teacher, going back to your long, long ago history, you could probably remember how many times were these broken on people's backpacks. This is like a real home practical application.
Home and practical, and again, if you're designing, if you have kids envisioning things, right, and then the ability to design, that is a great example. You know, hey, let's design a better this or that, and they can make something that's not just physical appearance, but actually functions and works.
Yeah.
And they can even use after. So is it going to be cheaper than a mass manufactured part? No, but when you design a one that's specific to a specific use that the kids come up with, you know, like this is simple, but you know, simple design, but again, something that somebody can envision to change somebody's life or to change how you interact. You can't do it. You just can't go out and buy the part because it doesn't exist.
And it can be scaled. Going back to your scaling.
And it can be scaled.
Suppose your backpack needs a bigger buckle, needs a smaller buckle. That's where the Zortrax really does a nice job, because the quality of this, I mean, it's functional. I mean, we've had this and it just keeps bouncing back. It's not going to break down. And if you need a smaller size, you can make a slightly smaller size. If you need a bigger size, they're all pretty sturdy, and it's a strong item.
And if you're big in camping, you might think of other designs. You'd be like, hey, for this kind of use, I need this. Maybe I need a one-handed single, you know, push point or something.
Yeah.
They can envision it, design it, build it, test it, because it's working.
And that's where you get into the seeing these in schools. We're seeing them. Right now, you know, it seems like a lot of high schools are pushing it towards a tech ed department, but we're seeing it more in middle schools. We're seeing it more in elementary schools. When you have a generation of kids that come through school that have been exposed to 3D design and 3D printing, that's when you're going to see a lot of these home uses take off.
You know, it was funny when you said that, bringing it to the lower. I was just thinking about, you know, some of those cross-curriculum education opportunities where, you know, they might be teaching the old man. I don't know why this came, because it didn't have shells, but the old man in the sea. But something, again, that's, you know, around the ocean, etc. The kids could actually, as part of their project and follow up and tying the curriculum to other areas, going into the computer class, etc., they'd be able to create items from the story as part of the output and not just a PowerPoint or a paper, but actual objects that they could design, manipulate, maybe go home and paint.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas they might not have access to it. You know, a kid in Omaha, Nebraska now can feel the shell from a story
and
experience.
A lot of this is that with like Microsoft's 3D print software and with Tinkercad, some of the other ones that are available, designing something anymore isn't this great leap of, you don't need to know all the things that you needed to know a few years ago.
Right.
Now kids can look at it and they'll say, well, how did you design this? And we tell them, this is what was used to design it.
Yep.
And you don't need to be an expert at CAD software. You don't have to be an expert at all these other applications. You just need to know, was it 3D print, the Microsoft package, or the Tinkercad?
Yep.
If you know these applications, it's real easy to go in, because they're gonna give you those base shapes. They're gonna give you a starting point. Where in the past, it was from scratch.
You know, to your point, I thought of when we first started doing 3D printing here, and we had our new director, Tim Pash, had just taken possession. He just moved here, got a new house, and he had an issue in one of his showers with one of the pieces that mounted and kept the pipe coming out and the shower head in place and all that. And it was older, and he couldn't get, you know, what he needed. He actually went in. I don't know if you remember this, Steve. Remember when he did that?
Yeah, I do.
He came in and he printed he designed. He said, "I need this thing. I don't know how to describe it. It's going to keep my thing in place and do it." He designed it and printed it, and it's running in the shower at home.
Oh, yeah. At our office, we have a coworker, Brian, that, and I don't know, hi, Brian, if you're out there. But Brian uses this machine for what he does on weekends. He's in those barbecue competitions.
Yeah, yeah.
So he came up with, he built some hooks for hanging up signage, built his own custom hooks. He builds all these little pieces for stuff that he needs just on the same application. So the one he made was the hook for, what did he do that in the barbecue stuff for, the little black hooks that he made?
I think they run lights with that.
Yeah. Yeah, so he made his own hook. So he visualized it and said, okay, I don't have to go searching forever for this. He only needed a handful of them. And he just lined them up on that printer bed and ran a bunch of them. But he does that all the time in our office. So he's coming up with different ideas to make things that have practical applications.
Again, because if you can envision it, you can print it.
Yeah. Another one he did in the office was he has one of those phone systems where it lifts the cradle up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his phone system broke. The cradle broke. He replaced the piece on the cradle, and all
repair,
it did was just repaired.
Yeah, and that was kind of like what my boss did. Was able to repair a shower rather than a big plumbing change, which he was going to have to do because they no longer made that part for his shower.
A friend of ours is in California that works with us on 3D print products has said one of the biggest marketplaces that he's seen growth in. That he was really surprised that was in old cars, because they're
parts you can't get anymore.
Parts you can't get no more.
Yeah,
and they're printing parts you can't get anymore.
Well, and that gets back to the whole, you know, for education, you're printing this piece with ball bearings and all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a plastic. But as technology's advanced, and we're already seeing some of these now, the newer printers are printing in metal. There's a company I saw recently. They're in Belgium, and they're printing housing. You know, it's not like my house, but it's housing, actual housing. They had a guy in England printed a 3/4 scale castle.
We saw that.
I mean, it's like crazy stuff. Yeah. So the future is not that far out. And when kids start doing these, what seems like, oh, that's nice. You know, hey, I'm in Nebraska. I don't know why. I think it's because I saw somebody from The Voice the other day from Nebraska. But, you know, hey, I'm from Nebraska. I've never been to the ocean, but now I'm printing things from that, from my story, so I can envision, I can feel, I can experience. They've gotten design skills that are translating to the future, and not a far-off future, a rapidly approaching future where manufacturing of all types of materials becomes much more accessible at a localized level, at a home level, and not in some far-distant manufacturing plant. But it might be the stuff they're doing for their own homes that are real working pieces.
Absolutely.
To repair a car or whatever.
Yeah, find that part that you just can't get anymore.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So I understand you brought us another video that shows something that you wanted to.
Yeah, this one goes into the industrial side, and it shows how using the Zortrax, they were able to build some a mold. So we do get people, not aside from the education side, but people on the industrial side, it's a real practical application.
So it's a mold.
They made a custom mold for a screwdriver handle, and they showed you how they used it by creating the mold with a 3D printer.
Really?
Yeah.
Steven, you want to cue that up? So we'll go replace this screen with D1, and let's play that. Thank you. So again, not even directly creating the objects, but here, envisioning and creating the mold to create the objects.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
To do it with injection molding, I mean, that's crazy.
Crazy money.
Super expensive. Crazy money.
So, you know, and you could be doing this in a school today, those kind of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, if people are interested, so we work with a lot of, and it's funny, because so tomorrow, yes, those of you who are coming, I have this nationwide educational group coming in tomorrow. It's great timing. So nice. They're going to be pointed to this video. I'm going to give them a copy on a USB stick as well. But, you know, if there's groups out there, education, even enterprise, et cetera, that are interested in prototyping and doing this kind of activity, how do they get a hold of you? What do you guys do with them?
Well, our site is profound3d.com, and we have set up the site so if customers know what machine they want to get and want to jump right on the machine, we sell the machines. Every machine we sell is designed to work. They work right out of the box. And we don't sell machines that are going to turn into the boat anchors and for the big paperweights. We sell good quality machines. Mm-hmm. We sell good filament. We also have a tab at the top that focuses on 3D and education. And what we do there is we work with our partners on all the different tools that are available, some of the curriculum packages that have been built by the different manufacturers. So you can go in and look at the different manufacturers that we have and see lesson plans. You can see how they've developed different products.
Ed-packs.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So. For the education side, we have information in there. We also put packs together. We put bundles together.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times we have schools that will come, they buy the printer, but then they have no filament. They don't have any supplies.
And they don't know what to do.
And they don't know what to do. So we put base packages together so that way the customers can just get the machine. They'll come with the filament to get started. They'll come with everything that they need to get going, the toolkit, everything that's involved. So that way they can budget for the right amount to be up and running. So
very nice.
And then we also try to update our blog on there constantly with all different practical applications that people are using in the 3D print market.
Philip the Duck lost his flipper, so someone printed him a new one.
That was Jackie in our office's favorite.
I saw that the other day. That was because they showed him at first. I was like, what's the matter with it? I hadn't read the thing, and somebody Facebooked it, and it looked like the duck was kind of. And then I was, whoa, he wouldn't even be able to walk.
No. And if you look down on the third one down on the right, there's one about a boy in Uganda who is working with having his prosthetic arm.
Look at that. Pull that up full screen there. Yeah. So here he is with his prosthetic arm. And that is awesome.
Yeah.
So changing, again, this isn't just fun. This is life-changing for this kid, right?
Yeah, and it makes it cost-effective. Or all of a sudden, a prosthetic arm might cost $50 or $70 in filament cost to print their entire arm. I mean,
probably not even that.
Versus what they were paying to get these arms done before.
And to your point, as a kid, he's growing, so he's going to be constantly replacing because of his size. There may be particular needs local. And they can customize that all on the fly in the field.
Yeah. Yeah, and it enables these companies to make the most of their grant money.
Wow.
That's another piece, too, because then they can cut that spending back on that. So that's
big.
So Profound 3D, we try to educate by going through and giving practical examples. We focus on machines that we know that will work.
Yep.
We have a great tech support staff headed up by Jeff, who handles all the tech support issues. We are, for the Zortrax machine, we are the U.S. distributor for the product.
Mm-hmm.
So our staff is factory trained on the actual machine. We support all the stuff here, and we're set up to go to handle anything that comes in as far as any inquiries into 3D printing. And even if you're just thinking about it and you need to get some answers on how this could potentially work for you, we're here to help you with that too.
Yep.
Or if you're just shopping around and you need to find a great price on a printer, we can help you with that too.
So, and just for everybody's edification, you guys are located here in Exton, PA, but you service
the whole everywhere. U.S., world, everywhere.
Yeah, so worldwide, definitely throughout the U.S. So if you're in education and interested, and by the way, let's just bring up one more time. You want to this
lightsaber?
That lightsaber is getting us. There we go. Look at why I can't help myself. I keep looking over here because as we've been going, and can you go from the side?
Yeah.
Yeah. So right down. Yeah. So you can see as we've been sitting here, it's been printing. It's almost done. I mean, we're pretty close to a full-blown bearing. A lot. I mean, that is just crazy. So in the time we've been sitting here, we've almost printed out a whole bearing. A whole. What do you call it when it's a system with bearings?
Bearing?
I don't know. Something with ball bearings? Yeah, we'll use a technical term.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, they've almost finished, and that's a very complex print run. Well, I'm impressed. This is very cool. So if people want to contact you, again, they can go to profound3d.com.
That's us.
We will have a link after when we post up the archive. Tomorrow, we'll make sure we include that in there. Any last things you want to say?
Some of the best feedback we get is from the people that have the machines. So I know Steve's been working with the Zortrax M200 for over a year now.
Yep.
And Steve, what do you think of the machine?
It just works.
That's the best.
Famous words from Steve.
Best testimony we can get.
Yeah, and I mean, and that is really from somebody who in a facility where we use 3D printers a lot. That's a big deal because they don't all just work.
Yeah.
And, you know, we certainly love 3D printing, and we like it. It's funny because the Zortrax we have out here, it's always like, oh, no, it's being used, so you got to go print over here. Like, well, yeah, but everybody wants to print their run on the Zortrax because we know it's just going to work, whereas you might get frustrated after two or three attempts.
Yeah. And I also thought this, when I came in, was actually a Wasp or a Yellow Jacket tool. That's what I thought.
But now you know.
But now I know. It'll tell me the time.
It is very cool. We who did I stumble on that, or was that you, Steven?
That was you.
Oh, that's right. I saw it on YouTube, and I saw all these videos to people talking about 3D printed, and I was like, a digital sundial. I was like, what? And it was like, that's crazy. So we found a design and printed it off. It sits on a salsa can.
Nice.
But that's it. So, again, profound3d.com.
Profound3d.com.
So you can, and it's profound3, the number 3, then the letter D.com. We'll have a link. Be sure to check it out. We'll have their other videos. And I want to thank you, gentlemen, for coming in
pleasure.
And sharing
thank
with
you.
Us today. This is awesome. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll have this that you can share with your colleagues. Definitely share it with educators you know. And with schools, as far as what they can be doing, think about extending those curriculum units, multimedia, allowing kids to envision and design. I mean, these are irreplaceable skills for the future, and to rapidly prototype, and even something as simple as this can change a kid's life. So think about it. Till next time, this is Mike Giannotti with
Frank
from Tim.
Here at Midday Cafe, bidding you have a great day. Take care, and as always, ciao.
Mics are off.
Okay. All right. Awesome, guys. Thank you.